It's a community in conversation. Join Kathy Kayla every Friday at 9 a.m. for Community in Conversation. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Right here on 101.9 High FM.
Good morning, I'm Kathy Kayla, and thank you for joining me for this Community in Conversation. Do you believe you've lived other lives before this one? Do you remember anything about your past lives? Were you the same gender, same religion? Do you think it's real or perhaps part of a collective consciousness? Maybe you think it's just part of our imaginations. By the end of this hour, you'll probably have more questions, but you will also have more information. I'm going to be chatting to two experts about past lives and souls. Coming up, I'm going to be speaking to Rabbi Yom Tov Glazer. He's a rabbi at Eisha Torah in Jerusalem, and his areas of expertise are Kabbalah, spirituality, and psychotherapy. Did you know that there are generations of people born since 1945 who remember dying in the Holocaust? I'm going to be speaking to Rebbetzin Sarah Yocheved Rigler about it because she's just written a book called I've Been Here Before, When Souls of the Holocaust Return. Sarah is a prolific writer on Aish.com and a best-selling author of 6 books. Before we get started, I wanted to know from you what your thoughts were on reincarnation and past lives. Let's take a listen.
Good morning, Kathy. So I reckon that reincarnation is probably one of the wackiest ideas ever.
I don't know enough about these things to comment on what may come hereafter. All I do know for certain is that we only have what's in front of us at each moment in time.
My view on reincarnation is that I really hope it's a fact.
Hi, Kathy. I definitely believe in reincarnation.
Hi, this is Janice Liebefitz, People of the Book on 101.9 High FM. My thoughts on reincarnation, I definitely think there is something like that that exists. I'm not sure that we know exactly how it all works. I'm not sure we are meant to know. I know that there are people who do understand this better than the rest of us. But yes, I do think that there is something there.
This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.
Rabbi Yom Tov Glazer received a bachelor's degree in humanities from the University of California at Santa Barbara. For 12 years, he surfed internationally on a professional level. He's also an accomplished mountain biker and professional musician. He received his rabbinical ordination from Eish HaTorah and the Chief Rabbi of Jerusalem. His areas of expertise are Kabbalah, spirituality, and psychotherapy. Rabbi Glazer, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. What does Judaism say about the transmigration of souls and reincarnation?
So the soul is, a very interesting thing because it's one of the only things in the world that's not physically grounded in anything, mechanical. The simplest representative is your own consciousness, like a person's consciousness, right, which doesn't show up in brain scans, doesn't show up in an MRI. And it's like the thinnest membrane of the soul. So meaning souls are extremely large, and they're extremely large even though they don't take up any space. And the thinnest membrane, outer membrane of the soul is one's consciousness. But because they don't take up space, they can't die. A soul can't die. Meaning the brain can die, but the soul can't die. It's a part of a person. The reason I use consciousness, the reason I bring it up is because it's just like they haven't found consciousness in science. So too, the soul doesn't show up materially.
Sorry, it's so interesting that you say that, because as you were explaining how souls are very big, but they can't be measured because they obviously sit in another realm, so to speak. It reminds me of the Aron from the Beis Hamikdash, right? The Aron HaKodesh, right, which we, even though we're given its dimensions, it didn't take up any space in the room, in the, right, Holy of
and
Holies.
And its dimensions equaled the size of the room, which made it impossible to really put in that room. Yeah, it's a dimensionless thing. And the only reason I mention size, because why would you be talking about size, is because the consciousness of the consciousness of a human being, which to us is like our totality. You know, think about your own awareness right now is the totality yeah. of the self. So we would think that that's a big thing when in fact it's the outer membrane of myriads of levels of soul. There's actually five levels to the soul, and 99.9% of your soul is not the part that you're conscious of. That consciousness is the 0.001% of you, your soul. That's what I'm saying. So the fact is that we're mostly dead.
Huh.
Do you understand what I mean by that?
Not really, but it's quite profound.
Well, think if a person died, okay? Now that little aspect of consciousness that they have, yeah? If someone died,
yes.
That little aspect of consciousness that they had is now going to become enveloped in the other 99%. The consciousness feels separate. By nature, it feels separate. And so it seems like it's got its own reality to it. But when someone dies, that 0.01% of themselves actually reunites with the 99% of their soul. You're mostly dead. You're 99.9% dead. And there's a 0.01% of you that's actually interviewing me right now.
Okay, well, trying to give you my full attention. You mentioned that there are five levels of the soul. Which levels reincarnate?
It's a very interesting question. So all the levels incarnate. However, when you understand each level of the soul, you would see that, for example, the highest level of the soul is called the Yechida, from the word Yachad, or one, or united. And that's all the souls, meaning every soul shares the Yechida.
Right.
And so your conscious self now, who's listening to me, it's the Yechid is also listening to me. It's clearly irrelevant. Anything I would say would be irrelevant to the Yechidah, because the Yechidah is the sum total of all souls. And, you know, nothing I could say would make that big a difference to it. That's why they say that when someone passes away, the only time you can get in touch with their soul is on their yort side, on the year anniversary of their death each year. That's the only time you can get any attention from it, or give it any attention, because it is in such an enraptured state. Don't forget, this world is a digital simulation made of the divine. In our world, what looks exciting, you know, like, I don't know, an earthquake or 9/11 or this pandemic or whatever, like things that grab our attention, in the outer edge of the, you know, the digital simulation, meaning the actual material world that we see, there's a whole inner world that's called the world of the souls, where all of this is beaming down from.
How does Judaism explain reincarnation?
So all these souls that the world's really made of, in a way, each soul has a mission in this world. No one's going to come into this world, meaning no baby will be born into this world without specific missions. And some of those missions are things they have to do, and some of those missions are things they have to go through, unfortunately. And that's why there's a way to test whether what you're going through is part of your soul mission or not. And the way you test it is if you can clean up your karmic energy completely, which is possible to do. If someone cleans up their karmic energy completely, it's a lot of work, but let's just say you're really clean and then you're still going through stuff. See, most stuff people go through is karmic, meaning they're attracting garbage interactions in their life. But if you can clean up all your karmic interactions and you're still going through hell, I mean, you're still going through stuff, then you know for a fact that's the stuff you came here to go through.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's really very nice to be karmically clean, because if you're karmically clean, then you can relax into very difficult situations that you're going through, because you know you're fixing stuff. Like, I wouldn't want to go through it, but since I'm going through it, you know, at least I'm fixing something here. I'm not just getting blasted by my own negative energy.
And yet we aren't really always given the understanding as to why we're going through something.
No, the understanding is usually very much not not available, very not available. And that's why people in the Jewish world would go to the great sages and ask them, like, what am I going through? And then the sage would say, he would say, oh, three incarnations ago, this is what happened.
At what point does the soul start reincarnating? That's my question.
So you can finish and then wait for the end of history, and then when there will be a perfected community. Right now, we live in a position where our body fights the soul, meaning the body's desires will try to usurp the soul's best interests. There will be a perfected community in the end of it all, which according to our tradition will be at 6,000 years, which is 219 years. So we'll have hit 6,000 in 219 years. But anyway, there's going to be a perfected community. And the most important thing to know about that perfected time is that the soul and the body will no longer fight. And it's a Garden of Eden style thing.
What happens then? Will life cease as we know it? Because life is pretty good.
Yeah, life will cease as we know it. There will be no more struggle. There will be no more test. There will be just living it in perfect harmony with the soul and the body will live in perfect harmony.
So we will have a physical form.
Yeah, physical form, peace on earth. I mean, think about it, like, right now, war or greed is all a function of the body. You know, more for me is better, you know, because more for another is less for me is the way the body thinks.
Rabbi, can we talk about the world of souls?
So the world of souls.
The world of souls sits within this physical realm, or they sit outside of this physical realm?
Yeah, so it would be outside. The world of souls is where souls exist inside the system, which is a like a giant step-down system, because the infinite light of God is something that nothing could take, meaning it'll just bowl through everything. Well, it'd be like trying to plug your phone into the local, you know, the main source of the Johannesburg power grid. It would blow your phone to smithereens. So there are step down conversion that happens from the infinite light, what's called the Or Ein Sof, the infinite light. There are step down conversions that it moves through. And the souls are along the line of that step down conversion. And it converts down and down and down and down and down and down until our physical. So the world of souls is in the higher realms. There's two major sections of the world of souls. One is called Gan Eden HaTachton, which can be translated as lower Garden of Eden. And then there's Gan Eden HaElyon, the upper Garden of Eden. And depending how one lives their life in this world is which one you'll wind up in. Now, probably over the last couple hundred years, no one has made it to Gan Eden HaElyon because people have been, you know, it's just we're very much pulled into the physical in our generation. But there were people, very saintly people, whose body attachment was so minimal that they were welcome into the Gan Eden HaElyon upon their death. And those people would be, you know, those people. We're talking about very saintly people. And they obviously met by very saintly souls in that world. You know, that's where you get to meet people like Moses and Abraham and stuff, because their souls are still hanging around over there. And they also, all those holy souls, they hang around here too, in that they can join you in this world. And it's called the Arizal brings it down. They're called the Iburim. And Iburim, there's two levels of possession. There's a negative possession that's called a Dibuk, which is becoming possessed by a soul that was stuck in some limbo state in the next world, and it can actually possess a human being only if they're unconscious. When I say unconscious, I don't mean asleep, but unconscious.
I mean living unconsciously. They're just going through
the motions. I mean like a car accident.
Oh gosh. I mean like, oh gosh.
Or I mean they passed away, but they have not yet been buried yet. And that's why we guard the soul of a person. If someone passes away, we always make sure there's another person with them at all times. Like, let's say the funeral's not going to be for a day or two, which that would never happen in Israel. In Israel, you bury the same day, even if families are out of town, because we consider the soul of the dead before the living. So even if a child or a parent has to miss the funeral, we rather protect the soul of the person to get them buried as soon as possible. But let's say there's an overnight, so there's always someone there guarding the body overnight. I myself have volunteered for overnight visits to stay with the soul of a person to prevent possession. So, because there's a whole realm. Speaking of the world of souls, I didn't mention this,
I think we need to do another interview about this, actually. Yeah. This sounds like a full interview on its own. Yeah. All right, so let me just bring us back to talking about reincarnation. Do souls get a choice on whether they can reincarnate or not?
Sure. I don't want to leave only on the negative. Other thing was the positive incarnation, which is called an Ibor, is you can actually have a, and we can do this in another interview, but someone can have an actual positive visitation from the souls in the world of souls that will visit the soul of a person. And in fact, my wife lights candles for hers. If you care for them, they'll care for you. You can kind of create a team of people you feel connected to, souls of the past, and never to feel alone, knowing they're with you throughout your day and stuff. And
that's a beautiful idea.
Candles often in the morning for her Iburim, as they're called.
Do souls get a choice as to whether they're going to reincarnate or not?
So apparently everyone gets a choice. And the choice is only kind of a choice, everyone's asked, meaning God says it's time, like the perfect family, you only come to the world when you have the perfect siblings, because we travel with the same people each incarnation. But that could take hundreds of years for the perfect kind of family satellite. Yeah, a constellation, it's called. When the perfect family constellation is going to be there, so God will come to that soul in the world of souls and say, hey, perfect timing now for you to go down there. What do you say? And the soul generally will refuse, because, like, why would I go down there? And God will say, you know, like, though you exist in my divine light and couldn't imagine anything greater, there is greater in an infinite realm. So go down there, do your thing down there, and come to a higher place. At which point the person generally agrees and comes down. I always wondered, I don't know the answer, but I always wondered why God asks the soul. I imagine...
He even asked the angels whether he should... You know, create the world. Didn't he ask the angels?
There was an asking of the angels about creating man.
Oh, about creating man, that was it.
But maybe another reason God asks is that the person can't say, well, you put me here. The person, God would be able to say, well, you agreed.
How do we find out if we have an Ibur? And how do we get in? Well, you did say to get in touch with them, just acknowledge them. But how do we find out if we have an Ibur and who it is?
Well, sometimes you'll have a situation where you're able to do something that you didn't really have the skill set for, and yet there it all comes through. Like, all of a sudden my wife only discovered Ibur because of the, she was watching other people do Sudoku, my mother and one of my daughters, and they had a totally different approach that seemed to be spiritual by nature. I mean, they just kind of got into this flow state, this like Zen state, and then just started filling out the numbers in like a fraction of the time that most people can fulfill a Sudoku puzzle. So my wife tried it and did it, and she was able to have this incredible, totally different part of her, like not even a part of her, like something came out of nowhere, and she just hit that flow state and did it. It's later disappeared, at which point she was in touch with someone who I would definitely interview if I were you. He's a great, great Kabbalistic person in Tzfat named Evan Yisrael Strauss. And he said to my wife, because she wanted to get it back, she called him about it. He said, go speak to your Ibors about getting your flow back. See if you can. And he taught her all about the Ibors. And ever since then, she's been lighting candles and honoring them and feeling their presence in her life. But so that's one way, is finding yourself in a situation where skill sets you just don't have are coming to you.
Rabbi Yom Tov Glazer, thank you so much for speaking to us and for sharing parts of your knowledge. We're definitely going to get you back to come and talk about Ibors, and we're going to get you back to come and talk about all the different elements of spirituality and spiritual reality that we just are completely unaware of. So thank you very, very much. Thank you so much. And I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, and enjoy those challahs that your wife is making.
This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.
Sarah Yocheved-Rugler is the author of 6 bestsellers. She gives a weekly marriage webinar and Jewish workshops on a spiritual approach to marriage with hundreds of members throughout the world. She lives in the Old City in Jerusalem. Her latest book is titled, I've Been Here Before, When Souls of the Holocaust Return. Sarah Yocheved-Rugler has discovered a secret society. Qualifications for membership include Holocaust-related recurring dreams, panic attacks, fearsome flashbacks, and phobias in children born after 1945. The secret handshake of this society is a childhood obsession with the Holocaust by those unrelated to survivors, who never heard it discussed until after their dreams or phobias were already haunting their young lives. Rebbetzin Rigler joins us on the line now. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I'm happy to talk to the holy people of South Africa.
Well, thank you very much for making yourself available to us. In your research for your book on children who remember dying in the Holocaust, what have you learned?
I've learned many things. I mean, I've worked on this. I spent 8 years researching and writing this book. One of the first things I learned was that there are innumerable people born after 1945 who have dreams, panic attacks, phobias, flashbacks, definitely from the Holocaust, but they're very embarrassed to talk about it. They're ashamed. Many, many of the people I was able to contact, you know, say like, I've never told anybody, you know, I thought I was the only one. So many of them, so many, and especially since the book came out July 12th, so many say, oh, I'm so relieved to know that I'm not the only one. Like people who are not in the book, who just found out about the book, and they're saying, they're writing to me and saying, you know, I thought I was the only one. I'm so relieved. It was definitely something that people have been carrying as a secret shame. And that's why I call it the secret society. And over half the people who contributed their stories did not give me permission to use their name because they're so embarrassed about this. They don't want to seem weird. People don't want to seem weird. Like, oh, I remember a past Gilgul. Gilgul is the Hebrew word for reincarnation. Although if you give me the opportunity, I'll explain the difference between the Eastern concept of reincarnation and the Jewish concept of Gilgul. But the people don't want to seem weird. And so for them, it's been a secret shame that they've been carrying.
It's quite interesting that you say that the two approaches, or that it's much more acceptable in the East and in Asia. For years and years and years, we were hearing about children in India in little villages who were remembering past lives. And yes. I think only up until the last 10 years has it really been something that has started being acknowledged in the Jewish community. Is that what set you on this path to writing this book and doing the research in the first place?
No, not at all. What set me to doing it was the fact that I am a Gilgul from the Holocaust. I was born in 1948 in New Jersey, in America, to second-generation American parents who had no direct contact with the Holocaust. The Holocaust was never discussed in my home. But I was born, literally born with, from the youngest age that I can remember, I had this seething hatred of everything German. I would not buy a German product. My mother didn't drive, so I would have to take rides sometimes from people. And I would not take a ride in a Volkswagen. This was in the 1950s. There were no movies about the Holocaust. There was only one book. It was called The Commandant of Auschwitz. And somebody in our Hebrew school, I was raised conservative. I was not raised Orthodox. I'm Baal Tshuva. And so in Hebrew school, there was a kid 2 years older than me, Alec Grobman, who had this book, and I would borrow it from him and read it and then give it back to him, and he would read it again. I would read it from, I mean, there was one book. I mean, it's hard to imagine now when there's so many books about the Holocaust, but I'm talking about the 1950s and early 60s, nothing. But I was absolutely obsessed with the Holocaust, which happens to be, although every single person who I researched have very, very unique experiences. Maybe a few duplicates of gas chambers, but otherwise very unique experiences. But the thing that draws everyone in common is they all had a childhood obsession with the Holocaust. So I had this obsession. And then when I was going into ninth grade, we had to choose a language in high school, a foreign language to learn. And the choices were Spanish, French, German, or Latin. I'm dating myself. In those days, Latin was an option. And all my friends chose French and Spanish. But much to all of my friends' surprise, I chose German. And they said, well, why are you choosing German? You hate German. And I said to them, I want to read Mein Kampf in the original. Know thine enemy. I mean, I was like just really like this obsessed person. And so I learned, so I started German classes. I had 1 week of German classes, a language lab saying, Guten Morgen, Fräulein Hess. And one night, in that first week, I was 14 years old. I woke up in the middle of the night, absolutely trembling, because I had had a dream in fluent German, where everyone, in the dream, including myself, was speaking fluent German. And I just knew that this was what's going on here. I went to Hebrew school 2 nights a week until I went away to college. I was very much, it was a conservadox or, synagogue we belonged to. I was the head of my synagogue youth group. I was very into it, but I had never learned anything, of course, about what happens to the soul after death. It was never discussed. And on the contrary, the rabbi was very proud to say Christianity is a religion of pie in the sky when you die, but Judaism is a this world religion. So we never heard anything about the next world or what happens after death. And then I went to India my junior year of college. I was at Brandeis, which is a secular Jewish university in near Boston. And on my way back, I tell about this whole thing in the prologue of the book, in the last chapter of the book, are my personal story. But I had a layover in Vienna, and I had a flashback in Vienna, a panic attack, a flashback that that convinced me that this was real. Like I had to have been there. This is not something that was like in my head. This was visceral. So that's why did I write the book? Well, I had no intention of writing a book because it was my secret shame too. I didn't want to be considered weird. But one day I was sitting here in my living room in the old city of Jerusalem talking to my good friend, Hannah Sara Zeller. And I told her, you know, I confided in her, I'm sure that I died in the Holocaust. And she said to me, so did I. And she started telling me about when she was 4 years old and her mother would put her to bed. Also, second generation American family in Brooklyn, New York. Her mother would put her to bed and she would see, like on her pillow, and she had this vision of being in the back of a truck with other women, crowded with other women in the back of a truck. And some of the women were dropping to the floor. And then she would see herself fly out of the truck and she would say, oh, now I'm free. She was 4 years old. She had no way to know. It would be decades before she would know that this was the Germans' first experiment in mass murder, was to put people in the back of a truck and pipe the carbon monoxide gas from the engine into the back of the truck in order to kill the people. She had no way to know that, but that was what she clearly saw. So then I realized it's not just me. There are others. And I started talking to my other friends. All of my friends, Baal Tshuva, American women living in Jerusalem. And lo and behold, every single one of them had reason to believe that they also had been killed in the Holocaust. And it was only when I started researching this book that I discovered that the Nativus Shalom, who is probably the greatest Hasidic writer of our generation, he died in the year 2000, the Nativus Shalom. He was the Slonimer Rebbe, Shalom Noach Berezovsky. He wrote that the Balei Tshuva of this generation are the reincarnated souls from the Holocaust, the Gilgulim from the Holocaust. And he says, and I'll read this to you from the book, because he said, you know, I know that South Africa has a very big Balei Tshuva population, and this is, I think, is so stirring. He says, he talks about the souls of the Holocaust coming back. He says, this will also enable us to understand the wondrous phenomenon of the Balei Tshuva in our generation, a phenomenon that has no natural explanation. How is it that so many people, some of whom were at the top of the secular pyramid, are leaving all the status and honor they had had behind and coming to join Hashem's service while demonstrating incredible greatness and self-sacrifice? As we explained, these are fiery souls that had already been killed for the sanctification of God's name and were now sent back to this world. These souls truly are on greater spiritual levels, and so their eyes are opened and they see things and hear things differently. So that's a good way to for all of your listeners who are Balei Tshuva to feel really good about themselves, because the Netiva Shalom wrote that, which always made sense to me, because, you know, like the 60s generation, I don't know if you had a 60s phenomenon in South Africa, but in America, you know, here are all these people who are non-materialists, who are not interested in money, not interested in status. How did they know not to be interested in money and status and things like that? Because if you died in the Holocaust, you realize that money didn't help you, status didn't help you, degrees didn't help you, you know. So that's the answer to your question about why I wrote the book.
That's an incredible answer. I'm not sure that we'll be able to maintain the standard, Revitson.
Well, it's a question of who we are, and I think we all want to, you know, be spiritually as great as we can be.
100%. How far do your memories go? I mean, are you familiar of, you know, of your name?
No. And only two or three people who are in my research survey were able to actually remember names. People remember, well, everyone is different. I mean, the book has a chapter on dream, has two chapters on dreams, a chapter on flashbacks, a chapter on phobias, a chapter on past life regressions. So there's all different kinds and all different things. But I want to mention to you how I found these people, because, like, how did I find them? As I said, I started to talk to my friends, and my friends started telling me their stories. And so I wrote an article for Aish.com, the website of Aish.com, on reincarnation with some of the stories I had gathered. I just had gathered a few. We're talking about maybe I had less than 15 stories. And I also wrote an article on Ami magazine. And then people started to write to me. And then I decided to post a survey online asking the specific questions. You know, like, first of all, where and when were you born? What religion were you born, raised, you practice today? A third of the people who responded to my survey were born in non-Jewish families. Because, and that's a whole nother subject, which has a whole chapter in the book called Jewish Souls in Christian Bodies, because the Klausenberger Rebbe, who himself was a Holocaust survivor and lost his wife and 11 children in the Holocaust, someone I interviewed told me that the Klausenberger Rebbe told him in the year 1970 that there are so many Jewish souls from the Holocaust trying to come back, and there weren't enough Jewish mothers to receive them, so they were going to non-Jewish mothers. And I have incredible stories about people who were born into non-Jewish families who are such obviously Jewish souls. This one girl, she's born to two Christian pastors in New Zealand. Oh. And at the age of 4 or 5 is saying, I don't eat bacon. I don't eat pork. The day of rest is really Saturday, not Sunday. where did that come from? The child didn't know a single Jew, never knew a single Jew until she came to Israel at the age of 17, you know, raised in some outlying place in New Zealand and then Australia. So anyway, I put the survey up online. And then if people Googled, say a person had somewhere in the world had a Holocaust dream, very common thing in our day is to Google reincarnation and the Holocaust. If they do that, they got to me. They got to my survey. So people, over 450 people answered my survey, in addition to like 100 and some people who wrote me emails. And that's how I got the basis of my research. The stories that I felt I want to go into, I contacted them and interviewed them and went deeper.
Did it help you to have people who were experiencing the same thing around you, that you could confide in somebody who had also experienced this past, you know, these past life memories?
No, I don't think it was, like therapeutic for me, because by that point I was clear enough about the whole phenomenon of Gilgulei Neshamot. As I mentioned before, it's different than the Eastern concept. Well, I'm very well versed in what goes on in the East. The concept in the East is you have one soul entity that enters a body and then leaves that body at death and then later enters into another body. And this soul entity keeps coming out and into bodies. In India, they call it the wheel of birth and death. In Judaism, it's much, much more complex. And the second chapter of the book delves deeply into the whole Jewish concept of reincarnation. The idea of Gilgulei Neshamot is you have sparks of souls. So only the unrectified sparks of souls come down again. You know, it's not a whole soul entity. It's on the unrectified spark, because the purpose of our lives is to do tikkun, is to rectify ourselves. So the parts that are already rectified, they stay up in the higher worlds, and the parts of the soul that are not rectified come down again. But you have sparks of souls, you have active parts of the soul, passive parts of the soul. I mean, a very, very complex system. So it's not like the Eastern concept, but the idea is still that, you know, that we all have in us ourselves memories of our past incarnations. There's some sources, some say that you come back as many as four times based on something that appears in the book of Job. But someone else says, I'm referring to eminent rabbis, say that's only for the wicked. The Rishayim come back only four times, but the virtuous people can come back up to 1,000 times. Yes. And most people have had already the Arizal, who was the greatest of all the mystics, the great Mekubal, who lived in Sfat in the 16th century. He said there are no new souls coming into the world. Already in the 16th century, we are all old souls. Already then, everybody was an old soul. So certainly now in the 21st century, we are all old souls. And so we've all been around the block a lot, and we have our things, which I think is, you know, some people are asking me, well, if I'm not a Holocaust reincarnation, like how does this book speak to me? And my goal really in writing the book was to convince everybody that they are a soul, that that's their essential identity, is that of a soul. And their purpose in life is tikkun. When you understand yourself as a soul that's been here before, and we all have propensities and fears and attractions and aversions. And often, like, we live with people. I give, as you mentioned, a weekly marriage webinar with Jewish workshops. And women will complain about, their husbands, oh, this, why is he like this? It's so, you know, it's so unfair. He's so unreasonable. But the truth is that everybody, there's always a reason why people are like the way they are. And often it has to do with past Gilgulim. So that your husband is like this, which makes no sense in the context of his present life or what you know about his childhood or his parents. Not genetic, not environment. Now, why is he like this? Well, he's probably like this because of some experience he had in a past Gilgul. And it gives us greater context to view ourselves and the people we live with more compassionately, because we understand, instead of like judging all the time, there's so much we don't know. Rebbetzin Zipporah Heller, who's now Rebbetzin Gottlieb, she says, you know, judging any one life is like reading page 328 to page 391 of a 600-page book. You don't know what came before. You don't know what's going to come after. How can you possibly know what's going on?
That is true, actually. I mean, I'm not even sure what happened yesterday. Can I just ask you, how are you with dogs?
How am I with what?
With dogs. Because I've noticed an extraordinary number of children who have this fear, and it's a genuine fear of dogs.
Oh, you know, so there are a handful of people who mention it, because one of the questions was what phobias you have. So there are some that have phobias of German shepherds, which of course the Nazis used the German shepherds very much to scare and to attack the crowds of people. But my experience, I have nothing in my personal like memory bank having to do with trains or concentration camps or dogs or gas chambers or anything, because I have one phobia I've had in my life, which was a very strange phobia. I have a fear of falling from the ground down. Like, I love heights. You know, take me to the top of the Empire State Building. I love looking at, you know, beautiful views at the top of the Himalayas. I love seeing mountains and being up. But I have great fear of, let's say I'm taking a hike and I have to ford just a stream where you just put your foot on this rock and then that rock and you're across.
Yeah.
And the stream is only 6 inches deep. So the worst thing that happens, you're going to fall into water that's 6 inches deep. It's no big deal. But I absolutely have vertigo and I cannot do it. I cannot do it. Somebody has to hold my hand to get me across. And I think that this is because, like 1.5 million other Jews, I was killed by the Einsatzgruppen, which were the Nazi mobile killing squads in Eastern Europe, in the Ukraine and Russia, Babi Yar, and many, many other places where Jews had to dig trenches and then they were shot from the ground, fell down into these ditches where they, many people have that recollection of falling down into, you know, and many people didn't die from the bullets of the Nazis. They died because, you know, they were suffocated by the crush of bodies on top of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Kathy Kaler. You're on 101.9 High FM. And this is Community in Conversation. I'm speaking to Rebbetzin Sarah Yocheved Rigler. She's the author of 6 bestsellers. She's just written another book. It's bound to hit our shelves soon. I have no doubt it'll still happen this year. It's called I've Been Here Before, When Souls of the Holocaust Return. It is about a generation of children since 1945 who are remembering how they died in the Holocaust. If someone is experiencing exactly what you're describing, Rebbetzin, what should they do?
Well, that's a very good question. If it's something that bothers them, if it's something that is an issue for them, one thing that they can do is what's called past life regression. They can go to somebody who practices past life regression. I recommend going only to somebody who shares your belief system. In other words, I have about 3 or 4 names of people. One here in the Old City, Ephraim Swirsky, the Old City of Jerusalem. In other words, Orthodox people who share your belief system. The whole idea of a past life regression is that it's not like stage hypnosis. People are very afraid of being put in a state of hypnosis where you don't know, you know, you don't know who you are, or what you are. It's a very gentle form of like deep relaxation or hypnosis where the person can access past lives. So a good past life therapist will ask the person open-ended questions such as what are you wearing? You know, look at your feet. What kind of shoes are you, a male or female? Because people can come back as either, you know, open and look around you. And so to identify like where you are, as opposed to like suggesting, there's no suggestion whatsoever in this kind of past life.
It's a video that goes on your head that you can actually see.
Yes, it's like a video. Although like it's not necessarily always something you get, like little, like a fleeting image can be a fleeting image, not like you're watching a whole movie where you see everything. And some people have more specific, you know, recollections than others. But if it's done properly with a proper, I'll give you an example. Ephraim Swirsky, who, as I said, is an Orthodox Jew who lives here in the old city of Jerusalem, and he also does this through Skype. A Rosh Yeshiva from Jerusalem came to him because he had a fear of showers. Now, he didn't believe in reincarnating Gilgalei Neshama, like, you know, he was like Rosh Yeshiva. And he was not afraid, or he loved swimming in the ocean or swimming in a pool. He took baths, but he had a fear of showers. And they figured, okay, he must have had a childhood trauma with a shower. So Ephraim Swirsky said, you know, so okay. First, he spends a lot of time preparing the person. Like, you know, like, what is this fear? And he can spend up to an hour just like, you know, preparing the person spiritually to go back. Then it was time to go back, and he says, okay, now go back to the first time you had a frightening experience in a shower. And instead of going back to his childhood, the Rosh Yeshiva went back to the gas chambers, which were, of course, outfitted like showers. The Nazis were trying to fool people into thinking they were showers. So then Ephraim Swirsky said, okay, so now, you know, the body's going down. Go with your soul. Go up with your soul. When a person experiences that the terrible death is not the end of the story, but that, you know, then they can go up with their soul, and then they're free. And then, and, you know, and Ephraim guides them to go up with the soul to a higher realm. Then the trauma is left behind. And this Rosh Yeshiva called Ephraim a week later and said that his fear of showers was gone. So that's how it often works. That's why I say it has to be a good past life therapist who is dealing with the soul and can help bring the soul through the body. Ephraim also told me about a Russian woman who came to him, and you know, when he took her back, she was in the gas chambers, and she looked, you know, like she was frowning, sitting there in his office in Ramat Eshkol here in Jerusalem. And she was frowning and looked very distraught. And then, okay, now, you know, go with your soul, go up with your soul. And then suddenly she was smiling. And he said to her, there, you looked a minute ago, you looked so depressed and shattered. She said to him, they can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter anymore. Nothing matters. It's just terrible. And then he took her up, you know, okay, now go up with your soul. And she was smiling. He said, well, why are you smiling now? And she said, before I thought that they won, but now I realize that we won. You know, once she got into the spiritual realms, like, so, you know, the bottom line, Kathy, is the Holocaust was a terrible, terrible, terrible chapter ending, but it wasn't the end of the story for any soul.
Clearly, clearly. And that is unfortunately where we have to leave it. Thank you very, very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and for sitting down and writing this book that I have no doubt people are going to be talking about. I mean, I personally know friends of mine have children who are remembering. And please God, we should see the bigger picture and understand why things are the way that they are.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy.
That's Rebbetzin Sarah Yocheved Rigler. She's the author of 6 best-selling books, Holy Woman, Lights from Jerusalem, Battle Plans, How to Fight Your Yetzer Hara. That's a good one. I think I could get my teeth into that. God, Tales and Lessons from My Spiritual Adventures, Heaven Prince. I have that book. It's absolutely fantastic. And Emuna with Love and Chicken Soup.
If people, after they read the book, if they'd like to get in touch with me, they can do it on my Facebook page. I have a Facebook page, which is Sarah Rigler, S-A-R-A, no H, Rigler.
If you would like to get in touch with Rebbetzin Rigler, you can do it. She's got a Facebook page. It's Sarah Rigler, S-A-R-A, no H, Rigler, R-I-G-L-E-R. You can also check out her website, sarahrigler.com.
This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.
When all is said and done, what difference does all this make in the here and now, I hear you ask? Well, wouldn't our hard relationships be easier if we knew that they were karmic? Isn't it a comfort to know our loved ones who have passed really are in a better place? And isn't there so much more to learn about Judaism? Throughout these interviews, one question has remained for me, and it remains unanswered. What does it mean for us as Jews that the souls of the Holocaust are coming back? I will leave that question for you to discuss and ponder over. If you would like contact details for either of my guests, just send me an email, kathy@chaifim.com, Kathy with a K. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next week for more Community in Conversation, and I wish you and yours a Shabbat Shalom.
It's a Community in Conversation. Join Kathy Kayla every Friday at 9 a.m. for Community in Conversation. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Right here on 101.9 High FM.